Good morning. Welcome to the second hour of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for this program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and at the controls, Henry Frayne this morning. In this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about the technology of voting. That is, the kind of mechanics, the method, the kind of machine that people use when they go to the polls and cast their votes. Certainly, over American history, from time to time, the way that people have voted has changed. And it seems to be the case that the reason that has changed is that there were concerns about the accuracy and the security of whatever the prevailing method was. So paper ballots gave way to lever machines, and lever machines gave way to punch cards. And in some places, punch cards have given way to computerized touchscreen voting. But that method in particular has a lot of people concerned. Concerned that votes that are cast that way might be lost or miscounted, or that these systems could even be hacked. And it is a concern because this fall, when Americans go to the polls to cast their votes in the presidential contest, in fact, even when people are casting their votes in primaries, something like a third of the votes cast are going to be using these touchscreen voting machines. In this part of the show, we'll talk a little bit about the mechanics of voting with Clive Thompson. He is a writer who specializes in writing about science and technology and culture. Currently, he's a contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine and, in fact, wrote an article for the New York Times that was published in the Sunday Magazine that appeared just recently in the January 6th edition. He is also a columnist for Wired Magazine. He writes for Fast Company, Discover, New York Magazine, Wired News, and other places. He also has a blog. Collision Detection is what it's called. So if you'd like to look at that, it's www.collisiondetection.net. And he's joining us this morning by telephone. As we talk, questions are certainly welcome from people who are listening. All we ask is that folks just try to be brief as they can so we can keep moving along, accommodate as many callers as possible. But questions certainly are welcome. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Mr. Thompson, hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. And yourself?
Terrific, terrific.
Was there something in particular that got you interested in trying to invest a fair amount of time and writing about the subject?
Well, I had been interested in voting machines, really, touchscreen machines, in the very beginning, because a lot of my Linux geek friends, which is to say friends that are really interested in programming and creating software and creating open source software, they were telling me that they were very concerned by these machines because the source code was closed and you couldn't inspect it to find out whether or not there were any flaws in it. So that, I mean, I sort of knew about the issue like 7 or 8 years ago by the sort of concern chatter amongst my computer programmer friends, but I never really thought that it would go beyond that. But it turns out that that there's a sufficient amount of concern amongst computer scientists, computer geeks, and citizens groups that it brought it in 7 or 8 years right to the mainstream. So I knew about the issue a long time ago. What happened though was it was very simple. My editor simply called me up about 3 months ago and said, I'm wondering about voting machines. What's going on with voting machines? And it was a very prescient question because, of course, voting machines, as I discovered, receive an enormous amount of scrutiny during the week of an election and then absolutely no scrutiny after that. Everyone just forgets about them for the next year to 2 years. The fact of the matter is it's really an ongoing issue, and when I started poking and prodding into the issue, I discovered that there was a lot beneath the surface that had not yet been talked about.
Yeah. Well, I think you point to something really interesting, is that you would expect that of the people or groups that would be concerned about these machines, they would be people who were in politics, in one of the parties, who were citizen activists, who were concerned about things like access to voting and accessibility and accuracy and security and all that sort of thing. But in fact, as you point out in this article, and as you've mentioned, that some of the people that have raised the first concerns and continue to raise concerns are people who make their living working with computers, our computer engineers, and essentially they're saying that they would remind anybody who's ever worked with a computer, they'd say, well, how often have you had a problem with your computer? How often has there been a glitch? How often has it done something that you couldn't figure out why it was doing that? Well, you got to take that kind of experience and at least consider that if you have a large number of these kinds of machines, computerized machines, that at some point you're going to have a problem, and ask yourself, do you really want to have that kind of problem if what you're talking about is something that is as important as voting?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, the rule of thumb I discovered is that the more you know about computers, the more terrified you are that they are running elections. So if you create a scale from a complete Luddite computer neophyte to computer scientist, the neophytes are happy with the machines. They think they're great. The computer scientists are completely terrified that software is running elections. I mean, a lot of it comes down to the fact that the way software works isn't well understood by the public, but a piece of software of the complexity of a voting machine might run up to like a million lines of computer code. So the problem is that any time a piece of computer software gets complex and long, there's just a certain amount of bugs that inherently are in it. No matter how hard you try to make sure you make it as perfectly as possible, it's just not going to be perfect. I mean, typos alone, they've found that there's a significant typo causing a bug every 100 lines, even when software is being made incredibly well at the best possible practices. If you get a million lines of code, you're going to have some undisclosed problems that nobody knows about that are only going to be found very rarely out in the field. And sure enough, that appears to be, from reports, what's been happening with the machines. They work absolutely fine the vast majority of the time, and then unpredictably out of the blue, they have some sort of a failure. That failure could be something very simple, or it could be something very complex and mysterious. Some of the things that have happened have included just individual machines crashing. In other situations, you've had machines freezing up. You've had voters reporting that votes appear to flip in front of their eyes, i.e. they touch one person's, candidate A's name, and candidate B gets highlighted. And then you have problems with the servers that count the votes, the centralized computers sort of back at the election county office. They're supposed to count all the votes that come streaming in from the different machines. And those machines have had crashes and errors. Altogether, what it's done is it sort of created, over the sort of 7 or 8 years that we've been experimenting with machines, it's created sort of a level of distrust that's much higher than almost any technology has ever had before, because people that observe the machines, up to and including many secretaries of state, are sort of looking at them going, wow, these things are, they work fine most of the time, but they crash. I can't predict when they're going to crash, and when they do crash, I can't predict how big or small the error is going to be, and that worries me.
Mm-hmm. I think when people do voice their concerns about these machines, it seems that what you hear most, or what I feel that I have heard most, is that people are worried that the results can be intentionally hacked.
Right.
And that is that someone could somewhere along the process intervene and throw the election. And it sounds as if it's not that that's not a possibility, but it sounds as if the biggest potential problems of these machines are, in fact, random error that's not something that was intentionally done by anybody, but it's just these other things that you talk about that have to do with the machine in and of itself, mm-hmm. malfunctioning.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. Let's break off the first chunk of that, the concern about hacking, mm-hmm. because in many ways, what's really interesting is it's those hacking concerns that have that have gotten the most attention and the most political attention, because early on, you had the computer scientists and computer geeks and citizens groups saying, look, you know, we're worried that these machines, somebody could throw an election, and it would be very hard or even impossible ever to find it out, because it would be done inside the machine, inside the software, and we're not allowed to, the average citizen is not allowed to look at that software because it's a proprietary trade secret, so how would you ever know that someone had gone in and fiddled with it? And so that was raised as a concern, and sure enough, every time computer scientists have gotten their hands on these machines to examine them, that's not very often, because the companies that make them will not just sell them to anyone. They will only sell them to elections directors. You can't walk up and say, hi, I want to buy one so I can crack it open and look at it, because, well, they know that's what you're going to do, and they regard, again, you know, for perfectly understandable reasons, you know, I'm not slagging them for this, they regard it as a trade secret. and they don't want people poking around. So you get these rare situations where someone has donated anonymously a machine to a computer scientist like Ed Felton out in New Jersey. And when he looked at it, he found that there were really an awful lot of extremely serious security vulnerabilities in these machines. And that if somebody had access to the machines on the day of the election, they could insert a single memory card that had a virus, and it would spread from computer to computer that could rig a vote. He showed that you could do this in a matter of minutes. They have other security problems that are really simple, like the fact that on some of the machines, the lock that keeps you from tampering with the insides is basically almost a completely standard little lock that you find to open any minibar in a hotel. I mean, it's that embarrassingly simple. So there was all these hackability problems. There's also the fact that machines tend to be lying around in easy to access places. Churches, for example. I mean, churches are fantastic places for ease of access for voting, because they're in all sorts of communities, and a lot of people are happy to go there, and they know where it is. But the fact of the matter is, churches are also totally insecure, because, strangers are supposed to wander into churches, which is exactly what I did in Pittsburgh 3 days before the election of November. I wandered into a church without anyone asking who I was, and was left completely alone with six voting machines that I could have done anything I wanted to. They have little tamper seals, but you could cut and reseal those; no one would notice. So the upshot is the concern about security and hacking is very real and is very serious, because were someone to hack and throw an election in a particular precinct, we might never find out. But the really interesting point, as you pointed out, is that if you ask a computer scientist, they will say, do you think you ask them, do you think anyone has ever actually hacked an election? And they'll say no. We think it's probably a remote possibility. And what has actually happened is that even though all the headlines and all the concern has been generated by the hackability of the machines, and every time a state like California decertifies the machines, says we don't trust them, they point to the issue of hacking and vulnerabilities. In reality, in the real world, what it has people most concerned about is the actual, not hypothetical, problem of hacking, but the real everyday crashes and aberrant behavior that they're seeing out of these machines, that 10% of them in any given election have some sort of failure. Yeah.
Our guest in this hour is Clive Thompson. He's a science and technology writer. He is a contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine and is also columnist for Wired Magazine, has written for other publications. He wrote a story on this very subject that we're talking about, computerized touchscreen voting machines and concerns about them. He wrote a story that was published in the New York Times Magazine in the January 6th edition. So I'm sure it's something, if you'd like to read it, I'm sure you can go to the New York Times website and read it that way, or seek it out in the library. He also has a blog. He writes about different sorts of things. His blog is Collision Detection, so you can take a look at that. And the questions are welcome to 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I am sure that any method you use is going to have problems, and there will be problems with. There will be always the possibility, the potential for tampering with the results, and that there also may well be problems with votes being lost, with people as they're voting somehow making a mistake and intending to vote one way and actually voting in a different way. And I think, even though people don't like to think about it, that you have to be willing to accept a certain amount of that, since no election in that respect is going to be perfect. So having said that, do you think that the potential for problems associated with the touch screens and mostly the kind of things we've talked about, just computer glitches, is that a bigger problem than any of the potential flaws having to do with misvotes or lost votes or anything else that are connected with any of the other kinds of ways that you can do it? Clive?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was a question you're posing to the audience.
No. I'm sorry. No, I'm posing that question to you.
Sorry. Quickly recap it.
Basically, that we know that other methods have their problems too.
Oh yeah.
So is this really so much
Absolutely.
Much worse?
Yeah. No. That's a very excellent question, because in some sense you can think of it as an economics problem. Every economics decision, every decision you make in life is you're not doing something else. So which one is the best decision? Mm. Every every computer, every voting system, I should say, has flaws. There's no voting system that does not have some sort of flaws. And so the question ultimately becomes, which voting system has the flaws the public is currently willing to tolerate? I think what's happened is that with the computer voting stuff is that go back to the reason why we brought it in. It's because of the hanging chads of Florida in 2000, and that was a system where you had a election technology that demonstrated a really serious flaw state, ambiguity. When someone went in there and punched a little hole to vote down in Florida, in a lot of cases, you know, the hole didn't punch all the way through. So doing a recount, you're left with this hanging chad, and the question is, did the person intend to vote or not? I.e., did they start pushing down and go, oops, I don't want to vote for them, I'm going to pull the peg back out again and leave that hanging chad as a way to keep themselves from voting, or were they trying to get all the way through and they just failed? And that was this is a serious critical flaw in that technology, that it leaves ambiguity as to how the person intended to vote, which you know, got us up to the Supreme Court. So essentially what you had was that the federal government said, we have decided we can no longer tolerate that level of ambiguity. We need something that has more crisp and clean, decisive results. And what happened was they although they didn't actually write it into the legislation, they created a piece of legislation called the Help America Vote Act, and they didn't specifically say you have to buy computerized voting machines, but it was pretty much strongly alluded to, because they said you have to get rid of these punch card voting machines, which are very prevalent. They were all over America, and you have to have something that's more precise. And you know, think back to 2000. Year 2000, it was when the dot-com boom was on, computer stuff was hot, people thought that, you know, computers could solve everything, and so it made sort of sense that you could have this very nice, clean voting system whereby, you know, if someone touched the screen for candidate A, there was no hanging chad, there was no ambiguity, it was going to get recorded. It was either there or it was not. Plus, they also liked the fact that the computer screens were big and bright. And you can make the ballot, you know, large font if you want, which is very important for older voters. So there was a lot of really positive things about touchscreen machines, and those things are still true. If they run really, really well, they can be fantastic for older voters, because you have these terrific, crisp, easy to view ballots, much easier than squinting at little pieces of paper. You can do really cool things like you can create ballots for any precinct and put them statewide, so that you could be across the state but still vote in your home precinct, because the machine you go to has ballots for every precinct. Mm. So there's a lot of really terrific things about them. But we started, obviously, to see the software problems, and those are the flaws. It's now beginning to look that the public consensus is that the flaws of computer voting are bigger than the flaws of going back to paper. Because essentially, if you talk to any of the critics of voting machine technologies, they'll say, you'll ask them, what do you think is the best system? And I would say, like 90% of the time, what they will tell you is optical scan, paper balloting. What that means is you're voting on a piece of paper that has little dots on it, and you fill in the dots with a pen or a pencil, just like you're taking a test in college or something. And then those are scanned by little computerized devices. So essentially, the idea is it offers you the best of both paper and computers, because the voter is actually sees the vote recorded themselves with their own eyes, because they do it with their own hand. So it's completely verified, and nonetheless, it's scanned, so it's counted quickly. You will find that with the results by that evening, which is a thing that the parties really want, the news media really wants, a lot of people want these days, is speed. And yet, if there seems to be a curious result, if the scanning machines appear to have malfunctioned, because they are computers and they can, in fact, malfunction and they can, in fact, be hacked, you have paper to go back to. You don't have to just trust it's on a computer chip. You can go and uncork the paper and look at it and review it. So that's considered to be the system right now that, although it has flaws, the flaws are not as bad as those that exist with computerized voting machines.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk with the caller here. We have someone in Urbana here where we are, and it's line number one. Hello.
Hi. When I was a child back in the 50s, my parents voted on, this is in Dallas, these large machines that had levers. They were called voting machines, but I think they were probably mechanical rather than electronic. Do you know anything about those, and can you speak to whether they were good, bad, or indifferent?
I'm sorry, what type of machines were they?
The lever machines.
Oh, lever machines, yes. Lever machines, very interesting history. They were brought into play right around the turn of the century, the turn of the last century, 1900, as a response to what considered to be failures, serious failures in paper balloting, good old-fashioned paper balloting, where everyone votes on a piece of paper, you stuff them in a box, and you count them. The problem with that type of balloting, of course, is that you could have ballot box stuffing. People would go in with a pocket full of ballots and shove them all in. You had ballots being sold. You had all sorts of problems. You had ballots being lost, quite frankly. You know, like badly trained or corrupt officials would lose boxes of ballots. This fraud and error became so significant that there was an outcry, and there was a thirst for a technology that would solve that problem. So you can see that this happens cyclically, right? And lever machines, that's when lever machines were brought in, because the idea was that you could not stuff a lever machine, because everyone goes in and clicks just one lever. Someone cannot go in and click the lever 80 times. They're only allowed to click it once. And so it keeps a running tally, and you essentially, it's true, it got rid of ballot box stuffing. It was a technological fix. They worked very well. They worked. In fact, they're still in use. New York State still uses lever machines. Now, they're not really allowed to be doing so because the Help America Vote Act also basically made it legally impossible to keep on using lever machines, because lever machines do have one serious flaw, which is that you can't really do a meaningful recount, because they keep a running tally of the votes, but they do not preserve each individual vote. So in a close election, all you can do is go back and look at the tallies again, but that's all you've got. And so then you might ask, well, then why wasn't there an outcry about lever machines before? Well, that's because in the last 10 years, we've been living in a period of unusually close presidential elections. Presidential elections, they come down to a few hundred votes, right? And so it's in that sort of ideological scrutiny that creates the need for a very, very robust recount mechanism. And that's why lever machines can't pass the grade right now. But they served very well for 8 or 9 decades.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Let's talk with someone else. This is a caller in Champaign, and it's line number 2. Hello.
Yes, I wonder, did you see HBO documentary that came out just before, 2 years ago, just before the 2006 election, where they had somebody who was a programmer, and you know, who claimed that, you know, these machines. So in this case, they went to Leon County in Florida, and they were testing. They got the person in charge of elections there to allow them to work with and test one of their mm-hmm. optical scan machines. And this person said that he could hack the machine so that it would give a different result. So they gave him access to the card, I guess it was, that somehow, so he could hack the machine, and it just didn't take him very long. And then they had, you know, on camera there, they had, I think it was 8 or 10 people mark their ballots. They, showed how they had voted. Then they fed them through the machine, and the result came out differently from what the paper ballots came out.
That's right. Yes, you're speaking specifically. That was a hack done by a computer scientist called Harry Hursty. It's very famous. And the way it worked was that Hursty basically was given access to the machine and to the memory cards, and he figured out a way to rig the memory card so it started with a negative total, so that for one candidate, so that, you know, it starts with, say, -4, so that if you have candidate A and candidate B starts with -4, so he or she's always going to be 4 votes behind A. And it was very clever, and it's really very hard to detect, almost undetectable. So it's a very good example of how the fact that even though paper-based balloting using optical scan machines is regarded as more secure than touchscreen machines, it's not completely secure, because those machines doing the counting are computers. You have to be very careful. You have to have what's a very tight, what they call chain of custody around the machines and the memory cards to make sure that someone doesn't have access to them, right? So that's a perfect example of how no voting system is perfect. It's all about what type of vulnerabilities is the public willing to tolerate.
Well, see, this is why I kind of wonder why, you know, you made the statement that computer scientists say, well, you know, do you think there's ever been an election that's been hacked? And they say no, and right. I find that very hard to believe because, you know, we know that there's a long history of stealing elections in this country.
Absolutely.
And I don't think human nature has really changed that much. And, you know, there's so many suspicious things that have gone on, in especially the last two presidential elections.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and, you know, here in Ohio, in the last election, not only was there, you know, a really naked attempt to suppress
right.
Democratic votes, but then, you know, you have things like the Center for Tabulating the, you know, collating all the votes from all the different places was actually in the same building that housed the servers for the email for the GOP
mm-hmm.
campaign.
Sure.
You know, and yeah, you have things like in one of the Republican precincts in the suburbs of Cincinnati, they had, you know, 125% of registered voters recording votes.
Yep.
And things like that. Yet, and you know, and then you know, they weren't supposed to destroy the paper trail and things like this. Yet, you know, there's some counties they still went ahead and did that. And so, I mean, it seems to me that there's a lot of evidence. And for some reason, I can't understand why the Democrats, what's their vested interest in you know not protesting this. Has been, but you know, it takes people who are not in the parties to come forward and say, "Look, you know, I mean, these elections have been stolen, and there's at least enough evidence to make it highly suspicious."
Sure. Yeah. No. You raise an excellent point. When you ask a computer scientist, do they think it's being stolen? They don't think so. Partly because they suspect that. The first couple of attempts to do it would be unsuccessful, and people would probably be caught, and we haven't seen that happen, because a perfect crime is never committed the first time. In fact, that's also true with paper balloting. It took them decades to really get their, for the parties to get their methods of stealing elections watertight, as it were. And a lot of people went to jail while they perfected those techniques. So that's one of the theories. Now, nonetheless, as you correctly point out, there's a lot of aberrant behavior and there's a lot of extremely suspicious circumstances surrounding how these machines have been deployed. And this is one of the, to me, this is really one of the most interesting parts of the failures of software-based voting, is that because it involves so much secrecy, and because it involves putting private sector companies with trade secrets at the center of vote tabulation, and because the code is not scrutable to the average citizen, it creates this massive trust void, a massive information void, in which a lot of suspicion naturally grows. You know, it becomes very, very hard for anyone. Who has any suspicion at all, any legitimate concerns that there's chicanery going on, it becomes almost impossible for them to trust what's going on, and more importantly, it becomes impossible for the people running elections to prove to the loser, to their satisfaction, that they lost. And any time you have a system that has that level of trust in it, it's effectively broken.
I hope the caller will forgive me for jumping in here. We're past our midpoint, and I would like to introduce again our guest for this hour and also invite other people who would like to call in. The guest is Clive Thompson. He's a science and technology writer. He's currently a contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine and, in fact, wrote an article that was published in the January 6th issue of the Sunday Magazine on this very subject. You can go back and look at it. He's also a columnist for Wired Magazine. He writes for Fast Company, Discover, New York Magazine, and Wired News, among other places, and also has a blog. It's called Collision Detection. So that's www.collisiondetection.net, which he writes about a number of different things that catch his interest. So you can look at that. And this morning, in this part of Focus, we're talking about the technology of voting, particularly concerns about computerized software-based voting, which now is in use at something like about a third of the places around the country where people vote, or about, I think he says in his article, that maybe about a third of the votes cast are cast that way. Questions welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, you explained that the reason that we have these devices, the computer touchscreen voting, it has to do with the problems that we saw in 2000 with the punch cards. So someone, there was a feeling that, well, the punch cards have flaws, and so we need to come up with something different. The government put money into that effort, and so we ended up with these machines, and a lot of places around the country bought them. Are there places where they bought these machines, they've perhaps used them, and then decided that they're not happy with them and, in fact, have gotten rid of them? Or would say, if you ask them, well, what do you think about the future of these machines? And they'd say, we don't think there is any future for these machines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. There's definitely several situations like that. The most prominent one is Florida, because in Florida what happened is that after 2000, when HAVA came in, the Help America Vote Act came in with $4 billion to help counties buy new technology, a lot of counties in Florida went to optical scanning. But the most populous counties, the very large ones like Miami-Dade, they went to touchscreen machines. And then in November 2006 election, there was a very, very serious controversy over the use of those machines. It was in the congressional race between the Democrat Christine Jennings and Vern Buchanan, the Republican. It was a very high-profile race. It was to replace Catherine Harris, and it was very closely fought. In fact, it came down to a mere under 400 votes, incredibly tight race. But after the votes were counted and the results were put out, it was also found that 18,000 people, or roughly 13% of all voters in Sarasota County, had undervoted in that race, which is to say 18,000 people went to the polls in Sarasota and voted in every other race that was on the ballot, governor's race, several other congressional races, and they skipped that race, the Jennings-Buchanan race, for some reason. Now, that is a statistically improbably large number of people, because normally in your average race, an undervote is about 3%. This one was 13%. So what happened is that the loser, Christine Jennings, disputed the results because she says that she thinks the machines must have had some sort of failure. Either the screens were out of whack and they flipped votes, and she says she has hundreds of phone calls coming into her office on the day of the election from people saying they were trying to vote for her and they couldn't get the screen to record her name properly. Either it was a screen failure or it was some sort of software bug or something went wrong, but she essentially to this day does not trust that result. And she's still fighting it. It went to court. It went to several audits. The audits by the state claimed that nothing had gone wrong. And essentially what you've got is exactly the thing I was talking about, whereby when you have a system that has a certain amount of black box inscrutability, it's difficult in a very, very close election to convince the loser that they lost. And if you can't convince the loser that you've lost, you've got a broken system. At any rate, this caused such a controversy, this 18,000 undervote, and such negative scrutiny on Florida, that the governor, Charlie Crist, basically decided that Florida was going to scrap all of its touchscreen machines in those very populous counties and go back to, or go forward, I should say, to optical scan paper balloting, and that's what they did. So that's the most prominent example of a state that said, you know, after only a few years of usage, with a couple of very serious and one incredibly high-profile problem, they're just going to get rid of them. Similar things are happening in Ohio. The Secretary of State tested the machines, decided she doesn't like them, and she's basically now, she flat out is forcing Cuyahoga County, the biggest county, to get rid of its machines, and she's urging the rest of the state anywhere that they have them to get rid of them. In California, they never really used a lot of them, a lot of touchscreens, but the Secretary of State distrusted them and ran a series of tests, discovered lots of vulnerabilities, and basically decertified the machines. So the dominoes are definitely toppling. Colorado made a similar announcement in November. At the peak of usage, there was probably, I think, about 38% of the electorate was voting on touchscreen machines. It's probably down to about a third. It'll be about a third of them by next November's election. And I suspect that the number will probably decrease as time goes on.
All right, let's continue. We will talk with some more people who are listening. And next, talk with someone in Champaign. This is Line 1. Hello.
Yes, hi. I'm just curious about the role of open source software in addressing these election concerns. It seems to me that it offers a way to actually make it scrutable in terms of calculating the votes. Curious about your thoughts about that.
Sure. Great point. Absolutely true. Open source software has gone from being something that was talked about only by my sort of Linux geek friends back around 2000 to something that is now bandied about by secretaries of state. I mean, it was totally amazing to me. I'm talking to secretaries of state, and I'm saying, so if you don't like these machines, what do you think is the best possible solution? And they'll say, I'd like to have, you know, an open source software run thing so we can look at the code and, you know, put it online and have everyone inspect it and have thousands and thousands of the best computer engineers in the world inspect it and discover all the bugs. Completely fascinating to me that this argument is being accepted by the highest levels of government. And in fact, actually, Australia, a province in Australia about 5 years ago, decided they wanted to have secure and reliable touchscreen machines, and so they hired an open source company to run an open source project to create their software. Essentially, the company created the software, then, you know, put it online, let everyone take a poke at it, took back all the bug reports and solutions they found, compiled them together, and have had a system running since then. Very interesting. Now, that said, I think it's a really good idea to if you've got any software running inside a voting machine, to make it open source. And amazingly, even the folks at Diebold, the very controversial maker of voting machines, even they told me that they are considering making their next generation of touchscreen machines open source because they've seen the controversy over the closed nature of their code, and they think that their customer base is essentially sort of rejecting it now, that they're not going to be able to sell these machines to states if they're not open source. So that's very interesting. Having said that, there's one wrinkle here that is a real problem even for open source software, which is this. The way software is regulated, election software is regulated in the U.S., is that every time you create a new piece of election software, you have to send it to a federal testing lab to be tested. Now, the testing is controversial because it's being kind of lax and not very well done. But let's just make the presumption that it's being done really well, or were being done really well. Once the software is approved, you can put it out there and start using it. But if you discover any bug or problem later on that needs to be fixed, you have to have the fix, the patch, also have to be vetted at the federal level. And that can take 3 or 4 months. So in a sense, this becomes a disincentive for people that have software to patch it quickly. That's sort of what's happened. And in fact, if your software has a lot of bugs or errors in it, then you're going to run into a problem where you can't really patch it very quickly or fast at all. Or as I concluded in the article, it's possible that no software regimen is going to be robust enough to thrive in a regulatory environment at the federal level. Because I use tons of open source software. I use I run Windows, but on top of it, I run Thunderbird and Firefox and a whole bunch of open source clients. And I know that, you know, they're patched regularly. Like they have vulnerabilities and they have security problems and they get patched, you know, on a monthly basis. Now, if we created open source software and did the best job anyone could, it's probably still going to have some bugs in it. And when they emerge, it's going to take 3 or 4 months to patch them too. So open source software solves a lot of problems of software, but it doesn't solve all of them because of the nature of the complexity of software. There's always going to be some bugs that need to be patched. And if they take 3 or 4 months to patch because of federal testing, you're still going to have some problems. The more I've come to regard that even open source software might run into problems because any software has trouble thriving in a federal elections regulatory environment.
All right, we'll keep on here. The next caller in line would be in Terre Haute, and that's line 4, the toll-free line. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Mm-hmm.
The program is very interesting today. It's something that I've been concerned with, and you've landed on a couple of issues that I'm very interested in. The first question is, in terms of using touch screens and other electronic devices, and the inability to have a paper trail, and it puzzles me in that every day we go to the, we go to a gas station, we get gas, and up on the gas pump comes a total of $21.18. You get a receipt immediately, it's $21.18, and in the mail, a month later, you get another receipt that says you owe $21.18. and they match to the penny billions of times every month. So why isn't the technology already there to do this?
That's a really good point. ATM, we rely on ATMs all the time. We rely on banks all the time and credit cards all the time. But I would actually dispute your assertion that they match to the penny. In fact, they don't match to the penny frequently. I mean, not more than a fraction of a percent, but significantly enough that errors crop up. The reason why this isn't a problem with ATMs and credit cards is that the bank and its customer are not anonymous to each other. Which is to say, if I look at my statement and I see that $4,000 that isn't there should be there, I call the bank and I say, "What's going on?" Because I know who the bank is and they know who I am. Or similarly, if the bank sees someone charge $8,000 in electronics in Vietnam to me, they usually call me and say, "Is this really you?" Because it seems like aberrant behavior. Once again, they knew who I am and I know who they are, so we can talk together and figure it out. This is not possible with voting. When you vote, you have one point of contact casting your vote, and after that, the government is not allowed to know who you are. So if they have a computer crash, if one of their machines crashes and they're worried that they lost votes, they cannot call back their voters to find out how they voted to verify that it's correct. This is essentially the problem. You also cannot give someone who votes a paper copy of their vote to take home with them, because that allows vote selling and vote buying. So you have essentially what you have is a classic cryptology problem, a double blind cryptology problem. So you have to get it right the first time. Since it is exceedingly difficult to do so in a software only environment, this is what leads people to say, well, you need to have the voter vote on paper so that those can be stored and those can be referred to.
Mm-hmm.
Does that get at your question, Colin?
Well, it does, but I still wonder why a receipt can't come out that the voter can look and say, yep, that's it. Drop it in the ballot box underneath.
Oh, I see your point. Have something that just prints a ballot. What you're getting at is something that is considered to be the real gold standard in voting, which is that you could actually merge the clarity of a touchscreen machine with the reliability of paper by having the following system. Someone walks into the ballot station, and they have a touchscreen in front of them. And they touch their votes, and again, because it's nice clear screen, you get all the advantages for people with low vision and stuff like that. But what that machine is doing, and there are these machines exist, I'm not making this up, is it marks a paper ballot, like it comes out of a printer. And then, so you take it, and you look at it, and it's got all the little dots filled in, saying, here's who you voted for. You make sure that it's right. If it isn't right, you discard it and do it again. Once it's right, then you give it to the you put it in the ballot box, and then those get scanned. And so the brilliant thing here is that you have all the advantages of touchscreen in terms of legibility, usability, but you are creating paper ballots that get scanned, and better yet, the paper ballots are being marked in a very uniform way because they're done by a printer. So you don't have any problems of someone putting kind of a half a mark inside the dot that doesn't get scanned. That's something that happens with paper scanning, is that if someone sort of just is a little sloppy, then the machine might not record it when it scans it. So you sort of have this completely robust system. You get the best of touchscreens, you get a paper ballot that the voter can inspect, and you get the speed of scanning, and you get a reliable paper balloting. That essentially is sort of the gold standard. So if that's sort of what you're getting at, you've hit upon it. You're right. That is actually what a lot of people would like as the ultimate solution. The problem is it's very expensive, because now you're talking about a county needing to have one of these touchscreen machines that prints a ballot, and then also needing to have scanning machines to scan them. I think one ought to spare no expense in having good elections. It's worth spending the money on, quite frankly. But that solution does exist, and you've hit upon it, yes.
Yeah. And well, I've got to jump in here real quick because we're very short on time, but I guess I find myself wondering, is a system like that really so much better than an optical scan where what you're doing is you're handing the person the piece of paper and they're coloring in the little thing themselves?
Yes, it is, because when people are coloring those dots by themselves, they can get it wrong, they can color in the wrong dot by accident, or they can be sloppy and the machine doesn't scan the dot So this way, if you do the touchscreen, you get the legibility. People know who they're voting for, and the machine is printing, is filling in the little dots, so it does it perfectly.
We just have about 5 minutes left with Clive Thompson. He's a science and technology writer. He's a contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine and columnist for Wired, and wrote an article on this very subject. It was published in the New York Times Magazine on January 6th. So if you'd like to read it, you can go back and look at it. You can look at it online, I'm sure. Questions welcome, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Next, we'll talk with someone in Champaign County, line number two. Hello.
Good morning. The last bit about what I thought they were implementing here, we did go with optical scan in Champaign County, that there would be a instant verification so that you would, you know, you could draw your dots yourself, but then you would immediately be confirmed that it read right. And that actually hasn't been implemented here, and I think that's a solution where you don't need as much mechanism. It just, you know, allows you to verify that you've done what you intended to do. Well, I wanted to ask specifically about New Hampshire, and I want to preface it by saying I think caging is actually a much bigger problem, and we need to talk about that. It seems that the voter suppression in Florida was the felon list in 2000, and in 2004 it was caging, and a lot of people that were disenfranchised were African Americans. The latter case, it was African American soldiers who were in Iraq who couldn't be reached and were dropped off the rolls. But specific to the mechanism of touchscreen, I think Dennis Kucinich has mounted a campaign as requested, and I guess he has to, the law is that he has to pay for it himself. A fair amount of New Hampshire was touchscreen in the primary, and I think he maybe wants to do it tactically in the sense of highlighting the fact that there is no verification. But I don't know whether that's proceeding. But the idea that, you know, the complainant has to pay for the verification seems to be pretty lousy. I gather he's fundraising with it too. But I just wanted you to comment on that particular instance.
Sure, sure. Well, I correct me if I'm wrong, but in New Hampshire, it's all paper balloting. The consternation was the fact that in some precincts, it's paper balloted counted by hand. And in other situations, it's paper balloting counted by Diebold optical scan machines. And what was happening was that people were worried that the Diebold machines had been hacked or been tampered with, and that was why Barack Obama had gone in with an advantage that had not netted out the polls. So in that situation, it strikes me that it's pretty easy to discover it theoretically if you just did a random audit of a handful of those machines to find out if any of the results have been skewed. You have the paper ballot, just count them, check to make sure it's what the machine printed up, because those machines do produce errors. I mean, like, and that's why, you know, random auditing is a good idea. I think maybe what, again, I'm speaking out of ignorance, or I haven't been following it closely, but I think what Kucinich is doing is he's trying to pay for, and you're quite right, it is expensive, and this is a disincentive to do so. He's paying for an audit to find out whether or not those machines were actually recorded those hand marked ballots correctly.
Let's try and get one more caller, and we'll go to Urbana here, line one. Hello.
Hi. I have a problem with printers. I don't think they're all that careful, and sometimes, you know, the printing gets blurred, and so I don't think it's all that clear. I mean, and if they work perfectly, that's fine, but sometimes they don't work perfectly on these. If you have a printout from an optical scan, it might sometimes come out like if you get a credit card receipt at a store and the ribbon on the printer has gotten dim, sometimes you can barely read it.
Yeah, no, you're right. But printers, in fact, are an enormous problem in Ohio, because there they have touchscreen machines that have a paper trail attached to it. You're not allowed to take the receipt with you, but every time you vote, it scrolls, and you're supposed to look at it with your own eyes to make sure that the paper copy is correct. You're sort of looking at it beneath a piece of plexiglass, with the idea being that if they need to do a recount, they will go back and they will uncork the paper and they will look at it. The problem is, in literally almost 20% of the time, there's some problem with that paper trail. The printer jams, or it doesn't print, or the paper gets put in upside down, thermal paper. It only prints on one side. So you're quite right. Printers have reliability issues on and of themselves. I think the reason why some people like the concept of having people vote on a touchscreen machine that produces a printed ballot that is then scanned is that the voter actually gets to look at the ballot and check to make sure all the little dots were carefully printed before they put it in. And so theoretically, the voter can detect whether or not the printer is working or not. So that's considered to be the sort of the check on the inherent fallibility of printers, which you're absolutely right is true.
We're at the point here where we pretty much are going to have to stop. We have a minute or so left. It sounds as if what you're saying is that the concerns about the touchscreen machines are such that we're going to be moving probably increasingly we're going to be moving away from them in the places that they have been adopted. But having said that, there are still enough places that are using them so that we can expect a lot of votes will be cast that way when people go to vote for the president next in the fall.
That's right. About one-third of the electorate in next November voting for president will vote on touchscreen machines.
And do we expect that because there still are a lot of different voting methods in use, though, that at some time within the next, I don't know how many years, 5 or 10 years, that will be winnowed, and in fact there won't be as many, that more people will be using a smaller number of methods?
Well, I think it's absolutely fair to predict that the touchscreen machines will continue to be, yes, winnowed out. Mm-hmm. What the resulting solutions will be is anyone's guess. At the moment, it looks like it'll be a lot more paper balloting. People filling in dots by hand and having them scanned by optical scanners is probably going to be the response in most of the situations where they get rid of touchscreen machines.
All right. Well, we are going to have to leave it at that. One more time, I want to mention that our guest, Clive Thompson, is a contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine. He wrote an article that was published in their in the Sunday Magazine on January 6th. So if you want to read that, you certainly can. He is also columnist for Wired Magazine. He's written for Fast Company, Discover, New York Magazine, and Wired News, among others, and has a blog in which he writes about a lot of different things. That's Collision Detection. So if you want to take a look at that, that's www.collisiondetection.net. And Mr. Thompson, thanks very much.
Take care.